G'day, Footyology listeners. Roko here. Enjoy our podcast? Well, you can become an official Footyology podcast supporter simply by using the supporter feature through Acast. There's no subscription or regular commitment, just the sheer satisfaction that comes with knowing you've kept the debt collectors from our door. No, just kidding. It does help, though. If you want to get started, you just need to follow the support this show link in the show description. Thanks again, and now let's get on with it. Hello everyone, welcome to Footyology Final Siren after one of the upsets of season 2021. An amazing victory to GWS down at GMHBA Stadium over the Cats by 19 points. Really gutsy effort. 8 changes they'd made prior to this side. 18 players on the injury list. Very much a second-string team, this, for the Giants. Cats ran into a few injury problems of their own during this game, which we'll talk about. But in terms of the top eight, a really significant result. GWS now, for the moment at least, back inside the top eight at Fremantle's expense. Can they stay there? Well, it's certainly thrown a spanner in the works of the finals plans of several other teams, and no doubt one of the Giants' best wins in their entire history, which of course includes a final, several finals campaigns, and a grand final performance. We want to talk to you all about it. Giants fans, how wrapped are you with that? Cats fans, how disappointing was that performance? What went wrong? Were they just too comfortable? Did they expect it to happen? What of the injuries? We can talk tribunal. Joel Selwood might be in a bit of strife. Toby Green, again, might be in a bit of strife. Anything else you want to put on the agenda, send your questions in straight away. As I say, very good evening to my Footyology Final Siren co-host, Mark Fine. Well, I don't think anyone was counting on that, Finey.
No, I reckon footy tipping has... Look, it's always been difficult, but if you want to make a dang fool of yourself, then footy tipping is a good place to start, because that was very hard to predict. Maybe during the game it became more possible with Dangerfield going off injured, Gary Rowan being injured, ultimately Zach Tuohy spending much of the last quarter injured. Nevertheless, how many GWS players didn't actually take the field? Their much vaunted midfield was down to one man, and save for one of the best performances by a fullback that I've seen in years, Tim Taranto was best on ground. So well done to that young man. And Geelong, it's funny, you know, through towards the end of the game, and of course commentators are just, it's just one person's opinion, but on a couple of occasions, James Brayshaw said, "Oh, nothing to worry about here for Geelong." He's got to be kidding, doesn't he? Rowan injured, Dangerfield injured, Tuohy injured, and real concerns with the form of Parfitt Narkel. You couldn't play Narkel next week. He has to be dropped, and really, you couldn't play him again this season. He was that bad. So there are some worries for Geelong, I've got to say.
Yeah, I tend to lean more towards his way of thinking. Look, it could be costly in terms of them finishing top two, but that might not make that much of a difference anyway, given the venues. But it was certainly a lackluster performance. I just think it underlines the extent to which you've got to be on top of your game every week in this competition, particularly when you're up against a side as hungry as the Giants were tonight. What to make of the Giants? I mean, they have been up and down like a yo-yo this year. They haven't won. They lost their first three games. Since then, they haven't won or lost more than two on end at any stage of the season. We've seen them beat Melbourne. We've now seen them beat Geelong at Geelong. Alternately, they've lost to Hawthorn when the Hawks were going really badly, only drew with North Melbourne. Pretty ordinary loss to Port Adelaide last week. So what do you make of them? I think in terms of talent of those sides jousting for that eighth spot, if we assume West Coast is going to stay in the eight, I think they've got the most talent. Are they the most dependable of those teams jousting for the eight? Well, they're all pretty undependable, I think. But in terms of talent, I think maybe this Giants lineup is the best credentials of those sides shooting for the last spot in the eight. What do you reckon?
Yeah, would you add Kelly and Hopper to the team? Yeah, I would say yes. I agree with you. The problem now is, Rowan, that if there's any, if there's a semblance of common sense with the MRO and the tribunal, Toby Green's out for 4 or 5 games. I'm sorry. I know we'll discuss it, and I'm sure our viewers will fire in some comments and questions, but hang on a second. The man, that, you know, he's such a great player, but he cocked that elbow, and he had no need to cock the elbow, by the way, and he put it into the throat of another player who's now in hospital.
Yeah, well, you know, given the extent to which they focus on consequences now, he's certainly in a great deal of trouble. It's funny because I looked at the Selwood one and I didn't think that looked particularly great, and yet the consequences of that were, well, negligible, zero, really. So I suspect he might get away from that one with a fine. What do you think of that one?
Yeah, very dangerous. In fact, he didn't just bump. Was it Cumming? I'm not quite sure who he got.
Oh, I can't remember who it was.
He didn't just bump him. He even put his elbow down to his head as well. Yeah, I'm a great believer in giving a player a week when they play St Kilda the following week. No, irrelevant, by the way, St Kilda. I'm a great believer in consequence. Yeah, we've discussed this enough. You know, for every person that does that in football, maybe 10 times it won't be anything. Maybe the 11th time it'll be very, very serious. So you must not let players do it.
Right. Well, I'll tell you another one I want to put on the agenda, and I'm sure if I don't, someone else will. Anyone who is on Twitter tonight and watching the game might have seen a tweet from me after Harry Himmelberg missed a shot at goal from pretty much dead in front, going for a snap around the body from a set shot instead of a drop punt. And I said, players kicking set shot snaps from almost directly in front can get in the bin. I understand the snap around the body from a difficult degree of angle, but not from dead in front. He butchered it. Anyway, I tweeted that and I proceeded to get called a dinosaur and whatever players are comfortable with, blah, blah, blah. Have you ever seen a worse and costlier mistake of that type than Jordan Clark made? Now, that kick at goal, he was 15 metres out. He was on no more than a 20-degree angle. He snaps around the body, hits the belly of the ball rather than the end, and proceeds to kick. I can't remember if it went out in the full, but certainly miles away from goal. They would have been within 3 points. They had all the momentum. I would allege that was just about the difference between them winning and losing that game. Now, okay, a player's got to be comfortable with what he's kicking. But if you're not prepared to kick a drop punt from almost dead in front, from 15 metres out, there is quite a big margin for error in kicking the drop punt. Why are people saying it's safer kicking it around the body? I don't agree with that. I reckon, a scientist can calculate the percentages, but I would say you're a much bigger chance of mishitting the side of the ball than hitting vaguely in the region you need to hit a drop punt to make it go reasonably accurately. Clark was 15 metres out. That, to me, is just the best example I've seen of why a player in front of goal should be kicking a drop punt and not a snap around the body.
Yeah, look, some players are more comfortable kicking the snap, probably because they don't trust their ball drop. It's in between the ears. Interestingly, that kick that he took was terribly struck. But why did he kick it so quickly? I mean, I was actually sort of watching the game, turned away for a second, and he'd already kicked the ball. If they go by the old Geelong champion who really made this probably the modern phenomenon it is, Steve Johnson, and he was very meticulous in the time he took to take those kicks. Now, you're right. I think it cost them the game because of everything you said and the way he got the ball. That was a terrible kick by Isaac Cumming. I mean, it was a shocker. And that really would have demoralised that young back line because he was gifted that ball. The umpire wasn't even going to pay the mark until he sort of looked up and realised, yeah, it probably is 15 metres. And you can't just blame Clark, though. Boy, were they terrible in going forward in that last quarter.
Yeah, no, they missed their chances. I'm just in this case talking about that particular facet.
Yeah, I'd say that's terrible. I know you're big mates with Maxie Holmes' family.
Yeah, he had a
that handball. What was that handball he did coming into the 50?
Well, he also missed that shot on the run.
He did miss a shot, but you know that was part. Have a look. What did they end up on? 18 or 17?
17. He missed a shot early on in the first quarter too. All right, look, we've got a heap of questions. Get some more in. We'll run through the details while you're getting some more questions in. So the final scores, GWS 19-point victors in the end. Set it up early. Now the Cats got the first goal of the game through Jake Colajasny, his first career goal, and I think it's 127-odd games. That came up after precisely, I did write it down, where is it? It was, apologies, I haven't got it handy, but it was within a minute. GWS proceeded to kick the next four goals straight, in fact, five goals straight, because they kicked the first of the second quarter as well. That gave them a 24-point lead. It was an 18-point lead at quarter time. By halftime, they were out to 19 points. Third quarter, the Cats started off okay. You thought they were going to come back into it. GWS steadied again. Sorry, that was the last quarter. GWS, the first three goals of the third quarter, blew out to a 38-point lead at that stage. Jack Henry crept forward to kick a goal for the Cats. Radaglia started to make his presence felt. And then at the start of the last quarter, out came the Cats, a goal to Henry in 35 seconds. Another one to Tui on the run, unfortunately. Might have even pinged his hemi with that shot. Radaglia's second brought the gap back to just 9 points. And at that time, there were still 6.5 minutes left to play. We then had the Clark miss, goes down the other end. Tanner Bruin runs into an open goal to restore the 15-point lead for the Giants. And Harry Himmelberg wrapped it up with a snap around the body to the goal kickers and best as voted by you, Finey. Now, I've made a literal in the details here. First one, I think, I've got Henny kicking two for the Cats. In fact, Henry, of course, two for the Cats. Two to Radaglia, singles to Colajasny, Blitzarves, Hawkins and Tui. For the Giants, Toby Green, again, the pivotal man up forward. Four goals to him. Two to Brown, the Irishman, his first two goals in league footy. Two to Taranto, two to Himmelberg, singles to Buntine, Sproul and Bruin. The best, Finey, you've gone with for the victors. Sam Taylor, outstanding game by him in defence on Tom Hawkins. Taranto ended up with 34 disposals for the Giants. Green, Whitfield, Nick Haynes and Isaac Cumming. For the Cats, you've gone with Selwood, 27 disposals for the skipper, followed by Cam Guthrie, Stanley, Colajasny, Stewart and Bewes. Yeah, pretty much agree with those best. Sam Taylor, incidentally, ended up with 21 disposals. I didn't have time to jot down his marks, but the number of intercepts he made tonight was terrific. And anyone who can negate Tom Hawkins has clearly played an outstanding game. Be interesting to see if he's rewarded with the three Brownlow votes for that one, because I reckon he should be.
How did you go, Rowan, writing down that name, Colajasny?
No, I've worked it out. It's Colod. So first you go Colod and then Jash, J-A-S-H. And then Nidge, N-I-J. So I always think of the Monty Python sketch, the knights who say Ni, and I make it Nidge at the end. After 10 years, you probably should be getting it right. What was the other one that I used to have a rule with? Oh, coup de fides. It was kowtow fides. All right, let's rip through some comments. Ryan says, quick young teams can really trouble Geelong. I think that's true. Finey touched on this before. They need their younger Zippier players to have some sort of influence on the game. Tonight, Narkle, Parfitt, Max Holmes, I've got to say. Look, he got his share of touches, but not damaging touches. That is a problem for them. They need those Zippier players to exert some influence, or they can actually be run off their feet. Trout from Wood End says, great win by GWS, well marked in defensive 50. He reckons Toby Green might get 2 weeks, Selwood 1 week, massive injuries for Geelong. We will talk about the tribunal stuff. We'll just get through a few of those. Wild Panda suggests that you get some sleep, Finey. He's asking if you're okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm fine, but I've been watching a lot of Olympics and then, you know, even though that's the timing's good, but boy, have I, yeah, been burning it at both ends because, as I point out, I'm up at 5 o'clock 4 days a week to take my son to work.
Yeah, your eyes are looking quite slit-like at the moment.
Yeah, sorry. But yes, I'm knackered.
Sam Lewis, very happy with this result. Al J. Meyer says, g'day. Ross Wilson says, put a fork in them, Roco. About the Cats, after one loss in, what are they, hadn't they won 11 of their last 12 or something? Yeah. Might get Damon to check that. But
yeah, 11 of their last 12.
I'm not putting a fork in the Cats on the basis of that loss.
You know what's an interesting stat?
What?
They've only played three top eight teams this year.
Really?
Yeah, just the way that they're...
Oh, when they've played those sides.
Correct. Yeah, really? When they played
amazing.
Them.
Yeah. So who were they?
Well, Sydney. They played Melbourne and Bulldogs in the last 12 games.
So Sydney weren't in the eight when they lost to them, surely?
Yeah, maybe that was the third team.
Yeah, okay.
They played Richmond twice. Richmond hadn't been in the eight when they've played them.
Well, someone might want to double-check that one. Craig Gislingham says, every year the Cats hit the wall this time of year. 10 years the Cats have done the same thing over and over. I don't know about that. I mean, I'm not trying to rubbish that theory, but then they did get to a grand final last year and won two finals to get there. Mm. They did get to a preliminary final the year before. In fact, they've been in five preliminary finals. So if you're hitting the wall, you're not winning any finals, are you?
Yeah. No. But there is a worry with these injuries because haven't they looked their best with those three forwards together?
Yeah, well, we need to see the wash-up, don't we? So the injuries we're talking about, Rowan, who else are we talking about there?
Tui's done his hammy. That's a big loss.
Yeah. We haven't had a chance to see the confirmation. But okay.
Oh, well, he's done his hammy. He had they taped the ice pack to bottom of it.
Okay, so there's 3 or 4 weeks, I think.
Yeah, we have to really... It could be anything or nothing for Dangerfield.
Okay, so David Haley and David Haley says bleeding on the larynx. That's bad. Mm. That could be very serious, actually.
Trav certainly Duncan, certainly is if you're a race caller.
Oh, yeah, okay, which is not. Trav Ducker says karma caught up with danger after the 2020 grand final. Bit harsh. I know what you're talking about, the thing on Floston.
That's very harsh.
Oh, I thought that was pretty accidental, really.
Yeah.
I don't think.
All right. So, what did you think of Toby Green? I'm interested on your take.
I've got to admit, I didn't think for that sort of incident, I didn't think it was as bad as others I'd seen. He clearly raised the forearm, but I felt it was sort of like as much in the motion of taking the ball. Look, I've only seen it once on the replay. So it's one of those ones you want to look at a bit.
I watched it a few times.
All right. I didn't feel like it was the same degree of intent I've seen with other ones of those. And the precedent people are talking about with that one is Bailey Fritch. And to be honest, I can't recollect exactly what that was, but I think he might have got a week or did he just get fined? Anyway, someone can pick us up on that one.
I'll tell you, I watched it a few times, right?
Got 1 week. Yep.
And I really felt he wasn't protecting. You know, sometimes a player has the ball and he protects himself with the elbow.
Yep.
I thought he had the ball and he used the elbow.
Yeah, okay. Well, no, I'll have another look at it. I mean, he certainly has a remarkable capacity to get himself into trouble.
Yeah. And in games where he plays the ball the entire game and you marvel at what a courageous, wonderful player he is, he often finds time to do something outside the rules and spirit of the game. It's, and he sort of does it without malice. It's not like he's hunting down players or whatever. It's just he finds moments to do bad things.
Yeah, trouble certainly follows him around, which is why another reason when I look at him, as well as the appearance, I always think of Dennis the Menace or one of those.
He's so good, though.
That's a character he would have played if he was Australian kids sitcom.
Yeah.
Not much love for Jordan Clark, understandably. LJ Meyer says the quality of set shots at goals are complete farce this year. It is. I mean, we're in the most inaccurate period of goal kicking that league football has ever seen in close to 130 years. I mean, it's outrageous. What about last week, Richmond and Fremantle at one stage had a combined, I think it was 226 or something. I mean, and you mentioned, again, the kicking around the corner stuff, and it's, you know, players not having the confidence to kick set shot, kick with a drop punt. Well, for God's sake, get the confidence to kick with a drop punt. You're playing at the elite level. Now, I'm sorry. I know some people are going to hear me say this and think, are you not? I'm telling you, the one skill I had as a footballer was I was a good kick. I was an accurate kick. I wasn't necessarily a long kick, but I, you know why? Because I was the proverbial kid out in the street practicing with my footy, aiming between lampposts out in the street and stuff, and I honed my kicking. And I'm telling you, the drop punt is not a difficult kick. There actually is a decent margin for error when you kick a drop punt. You cannot hit a drop punt sweetly and still have it go vaguely accurately. Whereas with a snap around the body, if you don't hit it at the right part of the ball, you get those shockers like Jordan Clark did. You cannot tell me there is less of a margin for error kicking around the corner from that angle than with a drop punt. And if players don't have the confidence to kick for goal from 15, 20 metres out, dead in front, with a drop punt, what the hell are you playing league footy for? And get it right. Get out in the track and spend an hour kicking a goal and get your head right.
No way. Get out in the street. Do what you did. Get out in the street and kick it at the light posts.
Well, you get run over now.
I'm saying, but the problem is you'll be the only kid in the street. And
yeah.
Well, when there used to be 50 kids, it was safe. As the only kid in the street, it's dangerous.
I'm actually so old that I wasn't avoiding cars. I was avoiding people's horses and carts.
Do you remember that ad, just very quickly? It's one of my favourite ads of all time from the history of Australia, of Donald Bradman.
I don't remember the ad, no.
It was famous. He's leaning on a bed. He goes, "This is Sir Donald Bradman, a service announcement. I know a lot of young children like playing cricket on the street right until dusk. But be careful. If you're a driver of a car or a child playing cricket, kids on the street and cars don't mix." It was great. It was I mean, tragically, there'd been a lot of kids killed and injured playing sport on streets, and he was chosen by the government to make a public service announcement.
I wonder if the youthful Sir Donald used to take the water tank he hit the golf ball on and put it out in the middle of a street just for some added element of danger.
All right, in the mother country.
I'm going to zip through a few more comments. Ryan, again, the AFL think they're a professional sport, yet hardly any players have a set shot routine. It's a joke. Ross Wilson, again, Geelong would have to give West Coast back a first-round pick to get him to West Coast. I think we're talking about
Clark.
Jordan Clark. Another one on your eyes, get some matchsticks for them. Andrew Robertson says Geelong won't make the grand final, no ruckman. Well, interestingly, they did have a pretty comprehensive win in the hitouts tonight. In fact, I didn't take down the final hitouts, but three-quarter time they were leading the hitouts 40-23. The clearances, they ended up winning 39-32. So did they lose this game because of a ruck, not having quality ruckman? I wouldn't have thought so.
No, there was a point I thought Briggs was, for an inexperienced ruckman, having the best of Stanley, but from about a quarter and a half out from the siren, in other words, halfway through the third quarter, Stanley was probably Geelong's best player.
Yeah, I thought he was all right. I thought, sorry, I'm just calling up your best again. Yeah, I would have had Henry in Geelong's best. I thought
I had him. I did have him in their best, but I don't think he touched it in the last quarter. I didn't see. He kicked that goal, and then for the next 30 minutes, I didn't see him.
49-26 the hit-outs in the end. Well, Geelong absolutely dominated that early part of the last quarter. The inside 50s in that first 12, 13 minutes were 10-2.
Yeah.
The Cats
do you get a feeling that if Tui didn't get injured, given how nice that goal was and how easily they were getting the ball to 50 and then handing it around, if he would have been on the field and lurking around half forward wing, I think they could have won that game.
Well, possibly, but I'd absolutely, I don't often say things like this so absolutely, but I am very, very confident if Clark had kicked that goal and brought it back to 3 points, they would have won.
Yeah, I don't mind that comment.
I mean, at that stage, there were, I think, still more than 5 minutes left to play, and it literally went up the other end and Broome kicked the goal that restored the 15-point lead. So, incredibly costly.
Just how sad was Brent Daniels when he went off?
Yeah, it was very... His injury history isn't great, and he was very clearly thinks that that's a season-ending one for him.
And also, given that there's no crowd in there, why did they let Tom Harley in?
Oh. You know, the funny thing about that was I wasn't looking at the screen when I heard BT say Tom Harley, and I was thinking, why would he be there? And I thought, Geelong, but hang on, why would he be in Melbourne? And then he corrected
himself.
It
makes no sense.
I don't know where he goes sometimes.
And you did find out all about Matt Stevic and Melbourne grammar and...
Oh, and JB's tall tales and true.
Throwing a volleyball.
Tom Hawkins. Wasn't it Tom Hawkins throwing a
volleyball the length of the court and hitting somebody?
He's totally obsessed with private school education, James Brayshaw.
Even BT took the piss out of him on that one.
Did he?
Yeah, because then he mentioned somebody else and BT said, did he go to Melbourne Grammar?
Oh, yeah. All right, some more comments. Andrew Robertson says, Selwood definitely deserves 2 weeks, but will likely get a fine. Dan Fancher says, you look great, Finey. Don't worry about those judgmental viewers.
Thank you. Thanks for that.
Dimitri Burundanis says, 1, 2, 3 are all the same. I'm not sure what you're talking about there, Dimitri. Sorry. Oh, sorry, the top teams, Geelong, Bulldogs, Melbourne, are all Victorian teams. Cats weren't desperate. Tim Hunter says, Geelong are a great consistent home and away team, but don't have that next level to go to in September that finals demands. Yeah, look, I mean, history suggests that, doesn't it? But, yeah, I don't know. Have the sides that have beaten them in September definitely found a higher level? I guess Richmond did.
Richmond.
In the grand final.
Yeah.
And they beat them in the preliminary. Who else have they been out to? I mean, they lost in the elimination in 18. 17, they lost to Adelaide, who were clearly the best performed side of that season. 16 was an interesting one because they got jumped in that preliminary final by Sydney, 7-1. And that fits in with my theory about qualifying final teams who lose the preliminary. And yet that season, the Swans had beaten them, I think, at least once, if not twice. So,
yeah. Don't you feel, Rowan, that for most of those seasons, they weren't in the best two teams?
Yeah, I do agree. And that's why I'm saying that...
This year could be different.
Well, I wrote a column saying, you know, and I've got, you know, people will always jump on you for saying this. I say their efforts deserve a flag. And people go, no, you've got to be the best team of the season. I'm not sure they have been. And this season, even this season, they may well not be the best team of the season. But you keep putting yourselves in contention. I guess I'm arguing from a point of view of it would be a fitting reward for a decade of very hard effort. Maybe they will remain one of those sides that is just short of the mark and there's always someone just a little bit better than them. And it's sort of funny because that was the case back in the late 80s and early 90s, wasn't it? The Hawthorn were a better side than them over the year.
And then West Coast.
West Coast twice. Carlton in 95, you know. So
none
of those grand final losses were they necessarily the best team of the year. All right, keep moving. Sam Lewis says, did you see the hit on Nick Haynes that fractured his larynx in 2019? Late off the ball hit. I don't actually, Sam. Clearly not by Toby Green, unless he got really stroppy with him at training. No, I don't remember that one, I'm afraid. Frankie Diggs says, Isaac Smith missing tonight hurt the Cats.
Yes.
He will be one of the most important players for them in the finals when Geelong needed to come back. His run and dash was a glaring absence.
Yes.
That's a very good call. And when we were talking about Narkle and Parfitt, Max Holmes, et cetera, we definitely should have thrown in Isaac Smith. He's been a huge pickup for them, hasn't he? Sean Higgins, I know Sean Higgins has never been quick, but he's been a good running player. But that's one facet of his game that seems to have really dissipated, doesn't it? He doesn't provide much run anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, he's at the end of his career. If the ball's in his vicinity, he's still got good hands, beautiful body movement, can turn out of trouble, really knows how to, you know, now play almost in the telephone box. But you're right, his best football was when he was able to cover the ground and spread oppositions. He'd been a very good player, but maybe coming towards the end of his career.
Johnson Von Trapp, our mate New York, Andrew Burt, says, I said a few weeks back, Geelong don't have the Bulldogs' intensity, will struggle in a final against the Western Bulldogs. Well, they were pretty lucky to beat the Bulldogs at the same venue as tonight, weren't they? Took till after the siren. Yeah, look, you got to. I will say this. I've been big on Geelong's chances, but the big worry for them now would be, you know, they just got over the line against the Bulldogs and probably should have lost. Melbourne handled them pretty comfortably, and they are the two teams which, should Melbourne win in Perth, they will be behind on the ladder. So, again, we could have this situation where there's just one or two teams better than them over the year.
Worried about their depth. I really am. Kruger doesn't look like an AFL player yet to me. It just depends on these injuries are open-ended. You know, hamstrings at this time of the year, that's a great concern.
Well, he's still got Cameron and Duncan to come back, don't forget.
When's Duncan back?
Oh, at some stage. I don't think he's been ruled out for the year. I'll get Damon just to check the injury list there. All right. Adrian reckons BT's losing his marbles.
where did he have marbles?
Yeah,
Come on.
Got to have them to lose them. Matt Lang says Lachie Whitfield's still the most underrated player in the comp.
Yeah, very good, Whitfield.
Did you have him in your best, Forney?
Bloody hope so.
Yes, you did. Yes, you had him fourth behind Taylor, Taranto and Toby Green.
Look, I thought those three were clearly the best, but...
Four to six away is Duncan. So, yeah, okay.
Touch and go, really.
Yeah, it means he probably at least missed the first final and would then get another week off to recover before Geelong, being a qualifying final winner, lost the preliminary final. Now, I don't know if you saw it, Finey, but I've gone down that route again about finals by...
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, I'm sorry, but it is. And people are still saying to me the sample size is too small. And we've had 5 years of it. And you've seen a situation where the previous nine seasons, 17 of 18 qualifying final winners won their preliminary finals, coming up against a side that hadn't rested, was fatigued, and got beaten. Top four side beating a bottom half of the eighth side. Since the introduction of the pre-finals bye, 4 out of 10 qualifying final winners have won preliminary finals. So the The percentage has gone from 94% to 40%. It's having a massive impact on who wins the premiership.
Yeah, I'm sold on it. You brought this up early, and each year your position is only enhanced by the results. Now, we know that it was brought in not under false pretenses, but sort of for a reason that isn't really a reason.
It was brought in
for the gambling, to look after the gambling interests of people who were concerned about teams not trying their hardest. So I think it was what is known as a Trojan horse, that it was sort of brought in for a reason, but that's not why we've got it. But we can actually take it out with a Trojan horse, Rowan. because this extraordinary COVID season, I don't think affords the AFL the luxury of having a week off. You've got to get the season, you know, do the fixturing when you can and get the games played and the season over. I don't think we're in any position to put our feet up for a week. So Trajan horse it out of there and let's never see it again.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can't possibly predict what's going to happen with COVID, can we? But, you know, we're on track to have a full round again this week, which leaves just two after that.
Yeah, but you just don't want a week off.
But another aspect to it I haven't liked is the way, and absolutely it was brought in for integrity issues, but even then, we're talking about, I think Fremantle did it twice. I think North Melbourne did it. I think you're talking about three, no more than four games over a period of 3 or 4 years, and no more than two games in one season, a season of 198 home and away games. There's two where sides feel weakened teams.
And of course, they famously won premierships, didn't they? Yeah, I mean, well, just stupid. It's stupid. Well, yeah. Any gambler can see what's happening. So don't worry about gamblers. They know they're ahead of the curve anyhow. Bookmakers are ahead of the gamblers. And I can tell you here and now, it's not going to help any team win a flag. It'll set them back on their asses. It doesn't work. So now, get rid of it.
Now this, I mean, it also ignores the fact that it happens in European soccer weekly, you know, like because of the crowded schedules, and no one bats an eyelid about it. You can't play everyone every week. Yeah. Now, we're getting heaps of things on this. Now, Ross Wilson says need the week off for quarantine. Look, that's a reasonable, I guess it would be a reasonable safety blanket to have up their sleeve. But, I mean, I just, you know, it just makes me think the AFL aren't fair dinkum about integrity because, you know, if you're prepared to crack the walnut with a sledgehammer simply because how it looks for gamblers on football, but then you see these numbers on the pre-finals buy and they don't make you worry about are we getting the premiers we deserve?
Now, you know what I'm worried about, Rowan?
What?
That before COVID, when AFL largesse was running rampant, I just get a feeling that they enjoyed the week off. You know, we need to catch our breath before the finals. And not the players, the frigging administrators.
Yeah,
and also to more easily facilitate their end of season, you know, long lunches and big dinners and self-congratulatory award nights and, you know, head up your ass. Wonderful view of the world that just give us another week to luxuriate in our own glory
I agree. And I don't know this for certain, but I mean, all the feedback I see, I don't think the punters like it either. I mean, to our viewers, let us know. Do you like the pre-finals buy? Do you have strong objections to it?
Terrible.
But personally, I just think if you're going to bother having a 5 month long season with 22 games, to get into a position of strength so that you have a better chance of winning the premiership, how can you then, and you win your first final, how can you then take away all those advantages? And you cannot tell me that a side isn't thrown out of its rhythm by playing week in, week out, and then by the time they get to the preliminary final. In Collingwood's case, in 2019, on the day they played GWS in the preliminary final, they had played one game in the previous 29 days, and the average is something like 27. And we've seen Collingwood jumped in that game. We saw Richmond the year before, who were red hot favourites, famously jumped by the Pies. We saw Geelong concede 7-1 to Sydney in 2016. But someone always has an excuse. And last year, I remember, so Brisbane and Port Adelaide both won their qualifying finals, both lost their preliminaries. And I knew I'd be saying, but I also knew people would counter that by saying, oh, they were two, you know, relatively inexperienced finals teams, blah, blah, blah. That's why they lost. I mean, it's like people aren't even prepared to look at this. And I think it's one of the most important issues in the game, to be honest. All right, let's read some comments on that.
Yep.
Ryan says, the fact we play more than 17 rounds means the comp never has integrity no matter what anyway. Yeah, but again, do two wrongs make a right, you know? Andrew McNamara, no to the bye. Gary Butterfield, get rid of the bye. Willem van den Duren. Willem who?
Willem two.
Willem van Duren. Sorry, Willem. Pre-finals by an utter farce ruins what was the best final system in the world. Dimitri says bye is terrible. No advantage winning the first final. Unfair advantage to teams who don't earn it. Joel Mirandes hates the bye. Adrian says have the two byes, Easter and Mother's Day, and ditch the bye before the finals. Robert Rice says, with the extended lockdown in Victoria, I think the AFL will use the bye to send all the teams who make finals to Perth. Yeah, well, that's possible, isn't it?
Bring back State of Origin, by the way. You know why now's the right time to bring back State of Origin?
No.
Well, with all these...
Oh, for the sides that don't make finals?
No. But to tap into what has become a growing sense of state parochialism and hatred of other states through COVID. You know, closing our borders to New South Wales, Queensland blames Victoria, Victoria blames Queensland, WA doesn't want any Victorians. You know, it's the perfect time to bring back State of Origin.
Call it the COVID Cup. Sam Lewis says, keep the bye. It's the same for all teams that make finals. Did he not hear, Sam, what I just spent the last 10 minutes explaining? It shouldn't be the same for all sides that make the finals. You know, Sam, you are not saying that if you finish on top of the ladder, you should only have the same advantage as a side that finishes in eighth, probably up to six or seven wins less. Come on.
This is great. And I like the way you're reading them out. Keep the bye, get rid of the this. Keep the. It reminds me of a Woody Allen sketch when he was a stand-up comedian and he talks about getting kidnapped and the kidnappers have got him in the house. And they're negotiating with the police. And the kidnappers start off by saying, give us a helicopter and guns and we'll give you the boy. And by the end, the police have negotiated, keep the boy, we'll take the helicopters. You know, it's like all versions of this. Keep the boy, get rid of this, whatever, whatever. There's only one version. And that is play the season out. Do not stop. It's ridiculous to have a bye at that time of the year.
That's a standard Woody Allen comic device, by the way. I think it's Bananas, where he goes for a job interview and he ends up interviewing the guy who's supposed to be doing the interview with him.
There is a great line in that sketch, by the way, Rowan, that the kidnappers send the ransom note, the kidnap note to his parents. His father took it to bed, but he's got bad reading habits, so he read half of it. Fell asleep and didn't read the second half till the morning.
Well, I take the money and run when the bank teller can't read the ransom note he passes.
I have a gub.
Yeah. All right, we can talk about our favourite Woody Allen movies. AV says, there are people having a discussion with each other. Suds McDuff says, if a team dominates the season and has the luxury of managing their team, that's their prerogative. I agree. Yeah, I agree entirely. Peter Phoebe, just on commentary, the most useless commentary fact of the night was JB going on about where Tony Modra lived in Adelaide. This after I've been listening to Bruce McAvoney all week.
How good has Bruce been? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Can I just, JB, his actual calling, technically, I don't mind. I quite like. I like his voice and, he hits the right peaks and stuff. But the extent of the cocoon that that man lives in, it's a world of privilege and private school and resorts and Tony Modra's holiday lot down on the beach in South Australia and stuff. Mate, you badly need to get out and live for a week in Hoppers Crossing or Tarnit or somewhere.
That's not nice to Tarnit.
All right, well, Narre Warren or Cranbourne or Craigieburn, where some people closely say, no, David says, don't live in Craigieburn.
Live with Rowan for a week, wherever he's living. Or come out the suburb's not important.
Come out to the wilds of East Melbourne and tangle with the East Melbourne boys. But, seriously, come on. Anyway. All right, let's keep going on. Okay, we've come to the end of our questions, actually, Finey. So any other points out of this game that you'd like to talk about or things out of the week, anyone as well as Finey, send them in now and we'll talk about it.
I want to talk about my good friend, played a lot of cricket with him, and my dentist, Ray Montag.
Yes, go on.
Lee's daughter was in the 20K walk tonight and she did really well. Such a grueling event. So his daughter's Piper. She finished sixth, and that is a magnificent effort.
Oh, well done. Yeah, absolutely well done.
I mean, it's an enormous effort. The other two Australians were minutes behind her. But, you know, that is to finish sixth in the world in the Olympics in that grueling event. So she's great. They're a great family.
All right, Finey, we've just had another one come in. I'm not sure who sent this one in, but they're asking if you can sit still for 5 seconds.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. All right, JB Waffles On says, Adrian, Tim Hunter suggests whatever you do, don't make Finey try to guess Brett DeLidio this week. No, not happening.
No, I've got a good one this week.
We've got a time limit on all answers now. Oh, proud past, bold future. Wants our thoughts on the Tex Walker saga. Okay, I'll say this, that clearly whatever was said, and I might be out of the loop here, but I'm still not sure exactly what was said, but the fact that he has been suspended for 6 games and fined and has to do the mediation and counselling suggests that it was, whatever it was pretty unsavoury. The thing that struck me today, and I thought it's worth looking at if you haven't seen it, Matthew Nix's press conference, and he spoke about the impact of this. And someone said, you know, how do you feel for Tex? And he basically, to paraphrase, you know, he said, my thoughts aren't about that. My thoughts are about our Indigenous players.
Yeah, of course.
Indigenous players I played with at Sydney, like Michael O'Loughlin and Adam Goods, and he was quite emotional about it. And I thought, gee, that was a good thing to say. And also the other thing I think positive out of it is the courage, really, of the Adelaide official that reported the comments, because how easy would it have been to just go, hey, you know, pull him up privately. But this guy, you know, whoever it was, has said, no, we're not going to cop this. And I think this is perhaps the moment where we see that it's not just sort of empty symbolism anymore, that, you know, people want to see real action taken on this stuff. And a 6-game suspension, I mean, look, I haven't had the time to look up what other penalties have been, but I'm pretty sure no one else has been suspended for anything like that amount over examples of racism in the game. So
yeah,
it's a real sort of line in the sand moment for this issue. And I think what it says to me is that certainly the AFL are sick of it. I'll say this as a citizen and as a lover of footy and whatever. And I look, to be fair, I think football's been better or more proactive on this stuff than society at large. But I'm sick of people thinking that racism exists only when an Indigenous person or a person from a racial other racial group is abused to their face, or it's that sort of overt racism. Now, this is that sort of, I guess what the Tex Walker thing is about is racism of internal racism, you know, and it does make me despair about eliminating that. Because if a guy who's clearly a big role model and a former captain and has to go out and sort of promote these messages all the time is quite happy to privately say the absolute opposite, have you not taken in any of this stuff, mate? Have you not learned anything from being around Andrew McLeod and the other Indigenous players at your own club and the amount of Indigenous players in the AFL who now comprise something like 12 or might even be 15% of the AFL playing fraternity? I mean, come on. Anyway, how do you read?
I agree with you entirely. I'm going to bring something up now that, if taken out of context, could maybe be misconstrued as me being somewhat of a racist. And I just want your opinion on it. Anyway, you know me, Rowan, and I just, maybe because of my own background, being child of to Jewish parents who survived the Holocaust and lost in the entire rest of my family. I'm very sensitive to these things and to words, etc. I really am. So there was something really interesting in the coverage of the Olympics today. I want to get your take on it. The Australians won silver in the beach volleyball.
Yeah.
Great effort. Maria Fay, I don't know her surname. She's Peruvian by birth. And then I think I'm not sure the other girl's name either. Sorry, I apologise for that. Anyhow, they were speaking to the hosts, who were Matt Shervington, and I think, I don't know who his blonde female co-host is. She's part of the Channel 7 team. And she said something that I found uncomfortable, because the girl sort of said, look, we sort of apologise, we're upset that we didn't beat the USA today. And then the female host quite rightly said, you've got nothing to be embarrassed about. It was a great effort getting silver. Absolutely. And then she said something that I found uncomfortable, because she was saying it to two girls, right? And she said, especially to you, speaking to one of these girls, as one of 16 Indigenous athletes who were part of the Australian Olympic team. Why would you say you got nothing to be embarrassed of, especially you being one of 16 Indigenous Olympic athletes? I don't understand that.
No, I don't either.
And I think it's uncomfortable for the other girl there. You know, you've got nothing to be embarrassed of, but especially you, especially one of you. That's just a really strange thing to say.
I would interpret that as a sort of, you know, well-intentioned but unconsciously patronising sort of our special dusky brethren sort of thing.
Correct. There you go. Thank you. And you know, in trying to be, you know, I think some people are retracing their steps and their thoughts in this woke 2021, which is fine, but some of it does come across as sort of patronising and for me, it comes across as outwardly trying to tell the world of my own wokeness. You know, it is uncomfortable.
I wouldn't say it's wokeness, because if it was wokeness, it would be aware of what I'm pointing out. It shows.
I'm saying, but they think that that's being woke by. Yeah. Especially if you're Indigenous. No, that's actually really quite patronising, I think.
Well, you touched on a bit of a hobby horse of mine, but that whole phrase woke and the way it's used as a pejorative drives me absolutely insane, because it's like virtue signalling. People use it as an insult. Being woke, and it's become this cliche, but it's being aware of people's sensitivities about culture and race. And it's done out of a sense of decency and a desire not to patronise and insult and to be inclusive. So why on earth would that be seen as a negative, in the same way people say, oh, you know, social justice warrior? Hey, I'm proud to be a social justice warrior. I'm big on social justice. I hate minorities being discriminated against. I hate them being singled out. I hate the, you know, typecasting of certain racial groups. I posted something about the 800 meter runner the other night, and I got the usual array of just disgusting comments. You know, so yeah, I campaign as much as I can vigorously for social justice, and I'm proud of it. I'm not embarrassed by it. And people who say woke in a sort of sarcastic, pejorative way need to have a bloody good look in the mirror, because what they're criticising is people actually being alert and sensitive to other people's issues. I'd rather people be woke than bloody scornful and cynical about it.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let's read out some feedback on that, because it's flooding in. AV says, courage, talking about the Adelaide official, or did he have an axe to grind? LJ Meyer says, was it ever discussed?
Oh, hang on. I want to answer that. What do you mean, right? Did he have an axe to grind? You know, I don't like Tex Walker. I'm going to wait till he racially abuses somebody and dob him in. You know, that's sort of shifting the blame, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. Peter Phoebe says Peter Everett got 4 weeks and a $20,000 fine for abusing Scott Chisholm in 1999 at Waverley Park. Yeah, good call, Peter. I'd forgotten about that one. Finey, that is cringeworthy, says LJ Meyer. Johnson Von Trapp agrees, she'd regret those words. Wild Panda says, but where does being woke become patronising and against the ideology? I don't quite understand that one, sorry. Woke for likes, that's the problem. Okay, plenty of woke for
likes. Yeah, woke for likes, that's right. That's true.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, woke for likes, I like that.
But who are we to say that someone doesn't sincerely believe what they're saying? You know, like, who are we to... I mean, I get that on social media all the time. I get people saying, oh, you know, you just, like, if it's a feminist issue, you're just trying to get a root. Or, you know, you're just trying to be peace. I shouldn't have said that.
But really?
That's what people say. Yeah. I mean, who are we to attribute cynical motives to people for displaying those sensitivities? You know,
oh, no, like but I'm saying that sort of comment, especially the one today, I think is woke for likes. I feel it is. That's when you're just not thinking about it and you just, you know.
But the irony is it's actually the reverse of woke. It's actually
correct.
Condescending, yeah. and in a an unconscious way, it borders on racist because there's no reason attached to her singling out the Indigenous athletes. It's just like, I'm going to single out the Indigenous athletes.
Yeah, I'm saying that. I feel that is, you know, look at me.
Okay, so Wild Panda says if it's woke for woke's sake, it's failure of the agenda. I understand the point you're making, and I'm not. I understand the point you're making. What I'm saying to you is, you know, who are we to cast aspersions on the authenticity of someone making a comment like that? I mean, who are we to say they don't really believe that? I'll tell you when you can say that. That's when you're someone like Steve Price and you write something about COVID in a newspaper column and then you tweet something that's actually the complete opposite of what you wrote not 24 hours later. And great example of that today, he wrote a column about how Victorians all seem to be pulling in the one direction on COVID, and New South Welshmen are all fighting with each other. Then he sends out a tweet talking about how they should send the ADF into particular areas, i.e. read the areas where there are high concentrations of ethnic communities. You know, so he's directly contradicted. I mean, some of these people are so opportunistic that they can't remember what they said 2 hours ago, and it's so lacking in authenticity that you know, they, you know, if you firmly believe something, you're not going to directly contradict it. These people just say what they think someone will relate to and then inevitably contradict themselves.
Yeah.
All right, we've got more here. Okay, a few people liked what I said. Leroy Jones says Peter Bowl did good. He certainly did.
He did well.
Janine, I think he was, you know, sort of a bit of...
Yeah, I know. I'm starting to get really angry with gooder.
Yeah, I do know. You know what the most frequently committed grammatical error I see now on social media all the time? And Ross Wilson, if you're still there, you did it, mate, and I pulled you up on it. It's people who write would of instead of would have. Oh, yeah, terrible. He would have kicked a goal, OF.
Yeah, people that's no good.
Would have kicked a goal. You just
would have.
Say it slowly to yourself.
Yep.
All right, let's keep
what
going.
What are the two most mispronounced words?
Mispronounced?
Yeah.
They're not leaping to mind. What?
Well, magnificently, mispronunciation is often pronounced mispronunciation, which is completely incorrect.
Okay, yeah.
And there is no such word as mischievous.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good one. Yeah. Max, straight and narrow is straight.
On the straight.
And narrow. On straight and narrow, says Max Gorn. But yeah. Who calls it a straight and narrow?
Oh,
he corrected
oh, yeah.
himself, did he? Oh, well done.
Well, you've got to, you're on the straight and narrow, so that's interesting.
All right, so just quickly, Janine Burdoo has weighed in. Hi, Janine, and says, sorry, I missed it. What did Green do to Dangerfield? He raised his forearm and got Danger in the throat area. So you'll be, don't worry, if you missed it, you'll be hearing a lot more about it, I'd suggest, for the next 48
hours. It is sort of to a bit of, it's not an isolated incident in that when he has the ball, whether, you know, because he famously used to use his leg, he protects himself with the ball by really doing dangerous things to players coming towards him, doesn't he?
Yeah. He has a sort of a self-defense reflex.
Yeah. He's most dangerous when he's got the ball in his hand. That's odd.
Peter Andronopoulos says, what about Adam Simpson's comments about preferring players from private schools and not from single parents? Look, we talked about that last week, Peter, but in a nutshell, I think Finey and I both agree that on the one hand, Simo was saying, you know, that's without the resources, that's the way we're going to go. But the worrying thing for me anyway was the sort of presumption in his comment that, you know, kids who go to private schools have are on the straight and narrow, that, you know, people from Anglo-Saxon families need less support. So, again, it's that we've sort of got past that stage of overt prejudice, I think, by and large. It's now that sort of unconscious prejudice that we're trying to get rid of. And there's some prejudice sort of inherent in what Simo was saying, even though he wasn't saying, that's what I want us to do. He was sort of saying, that's what we'll have to end up doing. But I would say that the assumption they have to end up doing that because of those assumptions he's made is incorrect, if that makes sense.
Can I take you back, Rowan, to, yep. I think it's a really good time to bring it up, to one of the most controversial things said in the world of football and get your take on it. What Matt Rendell said that really put him, made him a bit of a pariah in football.
How many I wouldn't want to comment on that unless I had the exact quote in front of me.
Yeah, because I know it pretty well. I've sort of read it and I think what he said, how he was treated was very unfair. Because what he said was true, and it dealt with tribal indigenous young men coming to Melbourne to play football or to the city to play football, as distinct from indigenous footballers who had been integrated into society through, you know, maybe generations, you know, who lived in larger cities.
Talking about people like William Jarrah.
William Jarrah, Zephaniah Skinner, and just the clubs would be reticent to take those players because of the yawning cultural gap between those two worlds.
Maybe when he made those comments, he should have thought to clarify them at the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Offer a solution or make clear that he didn't think that was right.
100% correct. He didn't couch those comments in terms of a sense of care. They came across as a football club imperative. You know, the clubs should not be. It sounded like somebody speaking on behalf of clubs not to recruit players from traditional indigenous tribal settings. So that came across very badly. But he did clarify it, but nobody wanted to hear it. At that stage, it was take him down and don't listen to what he meant or even don't read it. But, yeah, it was interesting because what he said was true.
Well, the football world likes a good pile-on. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
We're going to get on to the tips very shortly. I just want to zip through the last few comments. L, incidentally, is very anxious for us to get into the quiz or the tipping, sorry.
You see, I knew that there were people who liked it. You think everybody just despises it.
No, I think people like it because the numbers always go up when we do it. What they probably don't like is sitting here for 15 minutes while you try and think of the right answer.
Now, listen, if we're going to hang me for the entire year for Brett Deledio, you've had your moments.
I know, but I don't make you wait 15 minutes.
All right, well, people can leave. You can leave.
I will next time. you'll have to turn the Zoom off. All right, lads, last few comments. Tim Hunter says, I think where the woke world really gets people offside is when people drag up past errors and try to turn it into cancel culture, i.e. Kevin Hart and the Oscars people do make mistakes and can learn from them. And if they have, like in Kevin Hart's case, shouldn't be branded for life. I see what you're saying. And that thing about sort of retrospective censorship
is very difficult.
I know you're big on that. But again, I don't necessarily like the phrase cancel culture either, because what happens is it gets appropriated by the... like in the way that the phrase freedom of speech has been appropriated by people who just want a license to peddle outrageous, you know, racism and homophobia and you name it, and cloak it in freedom of speech. And funnily enough, it's always those same types of people who, when someone comes out and objects to their way of thinking, they're the first ones demanding their... I'll give you a good example, or two good examples. Scott Murdoch, the SBS soccer journalist, who tweeted a, you know, admittedly controversial thing about Anzacs and their, you know, war atrocities he alleged they'd committed. And he was effectively sacked after public, you know, a really public campaign by the usual suspects from the usual media companies to get him. The other one, which was quite disgraceful, is Yasmin. I only know her as Yasmin, but the Muslim welfare campaigner who had quite a public profile. And all she did was on Anzac Day, someone said, you know, remember the Anzacs or whatever, and she said, well, you know, remember the Sudanese and the Syrians and the... And I saw that and I thought, yeah, fair enough. But because it was on Anzac Day, the level of outrage, and the Australian newspaper absolutely targeted her in a relentless, remorseless campaign that went on for like 6 months until she left the country and went and lived in England. And that's bullying. Yep. I just despise that. And the Australian... Yep. You know, I could talk about News Corp and the influence of Rupert Murdoch for hours, but the Australian is almost the worst because they dress themselves up as this respectable quasi-intellectual newspaper.
Now, what's the Australian?
Well,
it's the paper you used to read on Qantas.
Yeah, well,
who else would read it?
Well, read fairly widely in political circles, unfortunately, and they feel like they have influence. But, they indulge in some really ordinary bully boy tactics.
I mean, I don't know now, but when papers were papers towards the end, their circulation was...
Oh, it's always been terrible.
It was pamphlet-like.
Yeah, it's always run at a shocking loss. It's a vanity project of Rupert's.
Correct.
Really. Yeah. All right, two more.
Just on that, what newspaper is the greatest vanity project of all time? I love it. I loved it, but it doesn't exist anymore.
You tell me.
What was it called? The Turek Times? That one guy?
What was his name again? Jack.
It was hilarious.
Italian name. All right, it'll come to me.
Now, that was a vanity project.
Johnson Montrap says, cancel culture, another right-wing coined term. Apologists for poor behaviour use this term. And LJ Meyer says, Roko, get Dermy on Footyology to talk about the culture wars. Not on your life.
Dermy.
Not going there. I mean, Dermy's gone full. Never go full right-wing nut job. Dermy has.
Cancel culture does exist. I will not apologise as a child for eating fags.
All right, very good,
That's true.
Candy.
And Chicos.
Chicos.
Not my fault. Yeah, no, Chicos, those little chocolate jelly babies.
Oh, okay.
I can understand now that they weren't a good name, but that's not... I couldn't change the name. I just ate them.
Well, what about when, Coon Cheese finally changed the name to Cheer, and there was this torrent of outraged columns in the News Corp papers, you know, Sophie Ellsworth and Peanuts like that going, I will never buy that cheese again, you know, follows if you bought it anyway, you absolute, complete, nutter, grifting, opportunistic hack. One last comment, sorry.
Yeah.
I tweeted this before and I'll repeat it now. These people know what they're doing. They know that what they're saying largely, particularly when it comes to things about COVID, isn't true. They don't believe it themselves. They're doing it purely to appeal to a particular demographic they know it'll get traction with and advance their careers. They know it can have a negative impact on people's health and even life, and yet they're still prepared to do it. What does that say about those people?
Yeah, it means that, look, it's people who don't care about the feelings of others. It's people who, quite basically, have a superiority complex. And you know what a superiority complex is? It rolls into being the master race. I mean, it's just, you know, it's people who think they're better than other people, bro.
I don't think it's that in the case I'm talking about. I think it's people who are just prepared to do absolutely anything to further their careers. And we both know, Finey.
But in terms of just banging on a drum relentlessly from one side of the fence without ever thinking of the other side, it's funny. Now I'm going to be honest with you.
Well, didn't let me finish what I was going to say.
Yeah, okay. All right, because I've got something interesting to say to you.
Well, we both know very well, you know, one very good example of this sort of person, and it's disgraceful, and it cheapens the media that we're all part of, and it reflects poorly on all of us. And these people, 5 seconds after that person has disappeared from the media landscape, you will not remember a single thing that they've written or said. They will be a speck in Australia's journalistic history because they don't write well, they don't have any original thoughts, they don't even believe what they're saying. All they're doing is pushing their own barrow, and they can get stuffed. All right, now, say, turn your
word. All right, so the one word to describe all this is expediency. And, you know, I don't like people who are expedient. Number two, when I started on radio, I got given some good advice by Gilbo. You know, because I was, you know, when you're on for hours and hours and hours, he said, never, ever, ever lie. Don't ever tell stories that aren't true or half true, because it's much easier to remember the truth than it is to remember a lie. And I think that these people that are not true to themselves and simply serving their master, who are not always right-wing, sometimes left-wing, but whatever.
I just want to chip in for 2 seconds. Damon, will you please tweet out the Patreon link? This is a good chance to pose someone just saying they like the way we don't just talk about footy. If you like it, you're not a Footyology subscriber, get on board now at Patreon for $7 a month. Go on, Finey, sorry.
Yeah, so if you're writing insincerely out of the need to serve a master, then when somebody questions you on your stance on something, how can you remember what it is? How do you know what you... How can you then be a reliable source of information when you're not... What you really think is not what you necessarily write or say in the public. It'd become very sort of muddied and very hard, it's a very disingenuous way to act as a journalist. Because, I mean, the one thing, look, you might hate Andrew Bolt, but that's how he thinks. But there are other people who write similarly who don't even think like that, which is pathetic.
Well, no, I to a large extent, Bolt believes what he thinks, but I think there's enough he writes he doesn't necessarily think that. And he, I know for a fact, because I've read about this and I've talked about people who were there when it happened, he came back from his US posting and suggested that he had observed the birth of Fox News over there and the rise of the, what they call the polemicists, the, you know, strongly opinionated, divisive columnists over there. We didn't have a culture of that in Australian media. He suggested that there'd be an audience for it, and he was proven right. And I think over time he's come to believe more of the stuff he writes about, but there's still a degree of stuff he doesn't. What you say, though, is spot on. And the person I was talking about before, I don't even want to say the name, Finey, you say the name. All right, don't worry about it. The moment was lost.
I don't want it, because you know what? It gives oxygen. I'll tell you this. Rita Panahi wrote an article in the Herald's. I very rarely buy the Herald Sun, but I did this week. She wrote an article, And it's, look, I'll tell you one thing. If you're going to be given a column, I am amazed that she hasn't received some sound advice from senior journalists as to how to present an argument. And it's a basic, very simple system. And that is, in your opening paragraph, you present the two sides to the argument. That if there's a debatable question, you talk about the two sides, making your position clear through the body of the article, and a final closing paragraph, which states your position as supported by what you've written. It's, isn't that, that's, I mean, I learned that studying psychology. You need to have a closing article which wraps up what you've said to present your side of the argument in the best possible light. Okay, she doesn't write like that. No, and what she did was, she wrote this rambling article in the Herald Sun as to why, and it's just this statistics, just, and I don't know whether they're true because they're generated now from the internet and from various sources, but statistics as to why school children and teenagers should not be getting the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, right? And I just cannot possibly understand why a newspaper would print an article like that, yet on the front page, the Herald Sun absolutely says that, you know, what the government says, which is we cannot get out of the current bout of lockdown, not lockdown, until we reach a satisfactory number of vaccinated Australians. And then why in the middle of the paper is there an article saying not to vaccinate certain Australians? It is so...
Mate, they do that every second day. On the day they had, the day last year, the Sunday Herald Sun ran a whole front page saying, we must unite to defeat the virus. And then literally four pages back was a double page spread by Peter Credlin just slagging off the Victorian state government. I mean, they do this all the time. Now, let's wrap this up. And I'll just wrap up what you're saying quickly by saying, she's not a journalist. No fellow journalists are going to give her advice because, by and large, they hate her guts. And she's not out to make a well-reasoned, argued debate. She's out to parrot a series of cliches about various minority groups, which will find traction with the bitter, twisted, old, white Australian men who very grubbly lust after it, you know, like it's really
that wasn't this article, and that wasn't this article.
Okay,
and
let's stop it, mate. Let's finish.
And I'm saying, but that wasn't this article. I lay the blame at the Herald Sun for giving sound advice on pages 1 through 7, and then terrible advice on page 21. That's not acceptable.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's the one newspaper.
Wild Panda says he's a big fan of mine, but it's time to be open about my history with Reed.
yeah.
How open do you want me to be? I had a relationship with Rita Penny a long time ago. And it wasn't that enjoyable for the most part. But it is a long time ago, I can tell you that. Anyway, let's move on. All right, let's do the tips. So what's the tipping device this week?
All right, so I don't think we've done this, but I've thought about it before, so I'm worried we have done it, but I don't think so.
All right, well, tell me.
Okay, so the team you are selecting, you are going to pick a player famously known from that club for being a wonderful kick.
That's a bit subjective, isn't it?
No. I think we'll all agree that these are great kicks.
Okay,
and,
all right.
But we give each other the initials.
Oh, okay. All right. So the team we're tipping will be tipped by the device of the initials of someone who played for that club who was a wonderful kick. Oh, I've shocked Elle with that revelation. Leroy Jones is asking me if it was the Optus Vision goatee era. No, it was post that, Leroy. Unfortunately, I should have stayed with the goatee. It would never have happened. It was my midlife crisis. Surely no one is surprised by this. So I thought it was really pretty common knowledge. Anyway, let's go. So, all right, first game tomorrow. We have Carlton playing Gold Coast at Marvel Stadium at 1:45 p.m. All right. I'm going with VP.
You're tipping Carlton, Valperovic?
Correct.
Which means I'm compelled to go AC.
Ange Christo?
Yeah. Well, he took over the Woofery from...
Yeah, okay.
Val, you know, handed it to Christo, didn't he?
Very good. We've got. I'll throw up some other suggestions. Only don't get ahead. Now, anyone who wants to play the game, don't get ahead of us on the games thing, right?
Yeah,
we're only reading
right.
out the ones about the game we're talking about at that time. So L loves this game. She's gone CY. Oh, you mean there? Was that a Carlton play?
From this game?
Yeah. Wild Panda's gone Scott Camprioli.
No.
Who else we got? Wild Panda says, better you admit it. I just did. okay, Damien Smeaton's surprised with that revelation. Well, it was a long time ago. I'll tell you, it was like 2004 to 2006.
Oh, that's Geeko.
Oh, Chris Yaron. Chris Yaron. Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so we're both tipping Carlton. Let's move on.
Yeah.
4:35 p.m. Saturday afternoon at the MCG, Richmond playing North Melbourne. Okay, I'm going GR.
Jeff Rains.
Correct.
I'm going MB.
Malcolm Blight.
Yeah. Would you have accepted SI?
Stephen Nick.
Yeah. I thought he was a lovely kick.
Didn't think about him necessarily. I would have gone with John Burns or...
Yeah. You see, that's not a long kick, but he was a great kick. Stab passing.
Keith Gregg.
Yeah.
Barry Davis.
So a few choices there.
Barry Cable.
Yeah, good.
All right, we've got some more here. Hey, people, when you're giving your suggestions, don't give us the initials. Give us the name so we don't then have to guess twice. All right, well, so I'll find some other Richmond and North ones. We've got more Carlton ones. Heath Scotland.
No.
Alan Martello, Robert Rice says, in his Richmond days, obviously.
Not really.
Blighty. Joel Bowden.
No.
David Dench. Billy Barrett.
Barrett, yes.
That's Phil Van Dam. Well done,
Phil. Yeah, very good, Phil.
Gary Butterfield says Wayne Schwoss.
Wasn't Fred Swift a great kick in? Like he used to kick it. A country mile.
You've just gone off screen.
Yeah, I'm back.
What happened this time?
20% to go.
Okay. All right. We've got to wrap it up then. Ryan Hallahan says our friend in Craigieburn.
I know they had a person because I interviewed him once on my program. Like he was a Commonwealth silver medalist, actually. He said he was the worst kick in football history. And he admits on a number of occasions he completely missed the ball.
Barry Bazanko.
No, his brother was a famous bulldog.
I don't know, but you just said you got 20% charge left and we've still got seven tips to get through and you want to tell
a
long anecdote
Bob Edmund, Jim Edmund's brother.
I would never have picked that.
He played centre back for Carlton. He was born in England. He said he just was, you know, he could beat his opponent, but he couldn't kick. Literally.
Okay, other suggestions. L says Kane Farrell, Leon Cameron, Ross Glendinning, Graham.
You're going through game. All right.
That was North Melbourne Richmond, which we've just done.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
So I'm tipping Richmond. Finey's tipping North Melbourne. Next, we've got the showdown, 7:40 p.m. Adelaide Oval. Adelaide playing Port Adelaide.
Yep.
Okay. Or you go first.
I'll go SD.
Stuart Dew.
Yep.
All right.
Fair enough?
Yeah. I'm going to go SB.
SB. Sean Burgoyne.
Correct.
Would you have accepted BL? I reckon he was the straightest kick for goal.
Brendan Wade.
Yeah, one of the straightest kicks for goals I've ever seen.
From within a distance of 30
Yeah, like from within 40 metres, correct.
He certainly gets in the good bloke category, Brendan Lowe. Yep. Lovely guy. All right, so we're both tipping Port Adelaide. Next, we've got 7:40 p.m. Marvel Stadium, St Kilda taking on the Swans. All right.
Can I give you a quick Brendan Lade story? It's very good.
No.
Just quick.
Oh, come on. Okay.
All right. There's a certain dynamic, a certain place where you just, it's a shared discomfort. And both our sons were in the same year, obviously, at Glenora College. And I ran into him at parent teacher night, where you go from one room to the next. And I sort of recognised me without knowing, you know, just through the, whatever. And it was just this funny thing as we went from one room to another, you know, you sort of get shuffled around rooms. We just gave each other this look of we were acknowledging that with each meeting of a teacher, things were just getting worse and worse.
Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah. Have you ever been to those nights? Have you ever been to those nights for not your best child?
Our parent-teacher nights sort of, I don't know, we stopped in. I mean, the ones at my son's high school, it was like 10 minutes per teacher. It sort of wasn't even worth it, really.
You know, for our daughter, for our Andy, it was great. You know, it was like, oh, she's wonderful, very clever, whatever. Now, my son, Zane, has ended up brilliantly. He's an engineering apprentice. He's got his life in order. He's an absolute ripper. But school wasn't necessarily for him. And these meetings were torture.
Yeah.
You know, because the teachers sort of blame you. You feel guilty. Are you making sure he's doing this? Why doesn't he do that?
Yeah, no, you're right. I have, you know, over the years come to realise, I used to wonder at your capacity to do 5 hours of radio a night, and it surprises me a lot less these days, I have to say. All right, Johnson Montrap. No, we'll leave that one. All right, next, we have Sunday, Hawthorn playing Collingwood.
We're not doing Saturday night?
We did.
Did we? St Kilda, Sydney?
Oh, no, we didn't. I was about to do it. All right, I'm going with BS. Okay, sorry, Stephen Smith. We're initials of a really good kick from the club we're selecting is the device.
It's interesting if you do BS because I watched a game from 1982 last night on YouTube, St Kilda, South Melbourne, and Brett Scott kicked 3 goals in 5 minutes. And 2 of them were absolute rippers. Is that the BS you were going for?
No, but he's a very skilled kick. Highly decorated BS.
Highly decorated BS. In terms of Bob
in terms
Skilton.
Of his kick, correct, in terms of
Was Bob he Skilton. Supposed to be a good kick?
Yeah, lovely kick.
Okay.
Slow pass.
So I've got a great one for my tip.
All right.
You know
what? Tell us a story about him, mate. Just give us a tip.
Relax, mate. Relax. You know what's brilliant? This is absolutely brilliant because it could be 2 players, same initials, same position, both magnificent kicks.
I know who you're going to say before you even give me the initials.
Well, what's the initials? MB.
Yeah, Mark Bays and Mark Browning.
Yeah, isn't that good? MB for either way.
Yeah, no, they're beautiful kicks, both of them.
Now, I'm only going to tell you this because it annoys you. When I used to go 10-pin bowling with my mates...
if your phone runs out of charge, I will never forgive you.
When I used to go bowling, 10-pin bowling... Do you like 10-pin bowling?
It's okay.
Yeah, so you know the worst split you can get, the 2 pins...
The 7-10, yeah.
Yeah, you know what we used to call that?
Difficult.
Mark Bays.
Why?
Remember his smile? Like, yeah, we had 2 teeth in his mouth.
Oh, yeah, no, true. Yeah, good. Very good. Very good. All right. Mark Bays, Brendan Goddard is one of the best kicks I've seen, says Ryan. Yeah. Tony Lockett, Stephen Smith. Good
call. Yeah.
George Young, says Philip Van Dam.
Beautiful, brilliant kick.
Wisely. You're not telling us the George Young story.
No. Heard it before. I will. I'll tell the Rex Hunt version of not tonight, that story. You know that
Hawthorn,
story?
Collingwood.
No, I've got to tell you the Rex Hunt story.
Can't really seriously.
Why not?
Because we've been going way too long and we're losing people and I want to go to bed.
All right. Just what Rex Hunt said about George Young. No, forget it. If you don't want to know it.
I do want to know it, but just perhaps, you know, like, okay, go on.
No, don't worry. Don't worry. It's a bit rude anyhow. Let's just say good. George Young was well endowed.
Great. That's good to know. All right. Next, Collingwood Hawthorn. They are at the Hawthorn Collingwood, 2:10 p.m. Sunday.
All right. So Rex Hunt said when George Young was born, the doctor said to his mother, Mrs. Young, you've just given birth to a penis with a small boy attached.
Okay. Very good. All right. Hawthorn Collingwood, 2:10 p.m. Yeah, I can see you've got your second wind. I haven't. Okay. All right. All right. I'm going. DJ.
Darren Plumman.
Correct.
I'll go for BP.
Barry Price.
Thank you.
Okay, good. That's how it should be. Okay. Next game, 3:20 p.m. at Marvel. Western Bulldogs taking on Essendon. You can go first if you like.
IR.
Ian Rickman?
Yep.
How's that? A bloke who played six games or something.
Oh, what a kick he was, mate.
No, don't worry, mate. I watched the, I nearly dropped the magic then. I watched him play a lot.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah. Loved watching Chops. Pretty good get, don't you reckon?
I said well done. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going for LG.
LG. LG.
Popular choice with our viewers too, this man. While you're thinking, I'll just give out some other suggestions from the Collingwood Hawthorn game. Peter Dacos, Anthony Rocker, Doug Barwick,
yep.
Gavin Krasiska, James Morrissey. Good one, Leroy.
Yeah. LG.
Bernie Quinlan.
Yeah, well, he's the best.
Kelvin Templeton.
But, yeah, it wouldn't be hard to get BQ as initials. LG is
here we go again.
Oh well, I'm just gotta think who it is.
21st century.
Oh, so Reece LG for Gary, yeah? Okay. LG. Not a Leon or a Lee. Lee. Not a Larry or a Les.
I am setting the stopwatch this week.
No, I'll get it. Not a...
This is what you said last week.
Lou. Not a Lawrence. Laurie. I mean, that's who it should be. GL, but he played for Fitzroy. Or St Kilda. He was a beautiful kick, Grant Laurie. Oh, God. LG. Was he a goal kicker?
Occasionally. Probably played defence more often.
Okay, this is a tough one again.
Elle's asking if you're doing this on purpose.
No. Does she know who it is?
No, she's just like me. She wants to go to bed.
So she can go. Lee, is it Lee? Is it Lou? Lawrence. There's not that many first names beginning with L.
Think of the surname first, maybe. G. Bulldogs. G.
G.
Played in several preliminary finals.
Grant, no. And he was not a good kick, Chris Grant, I'll tell you that. Graham Gardner.
All right, now time's up.
No, I'm not. You can't tell me. Gunston.
No, this isn't going to drag on indefinitely.
No, it won't. It won't. LG. I'll get it. Give me some other clues, like proper clues.
He played in three straight preliminary finals and didn't win any of them. That should tell you the years I'm talking about.
All right. So,
so what years am I talking about?
97? No.
I said 21st century.
All right. So 2009?
That's one of them, yep.
2010?
That's another one, yep.
Played against St Kilda. All right. Like the good kicks in that team were, oh, what's his name? There's doesn't that
matter.
Nice kid.
If it doesn't start with G, it doesn't matter.
No, I'm trying to remember who he was. Maybe it does start with G. He's a nice kid. He was, I really like him. He's on Twitter a lot.
He's on Twitter.
He is?
Yeah.
Oh, what's his name?
The entire audience has got it.
Huh?
The entire audience has got it.
Yeah.
My dear, it's not a big audience. come on.
I reckon it's Lindsay Gilby.
It is Lindsay Gilby.
He's a really nice guy, Lindsay.
I know. All right.
Lovely guy. Sweetheart. Yeah,
he is. He's a lovely guy.
Yeah. Beautiful kid.
What day is it? All right. So now we're up to... So we're both tipping the Bulldogs. Yeah.
Lucky we didn't tip Essendon because you've never had anybody you could kick.
Oh, crap.
I'm kidding. Oh, now you've woken up.
Who do you reckon I would have gone? LB.
LB?
Yep. We just lost you.
Leon again. Baker.
Leon Baker, yeah. Why'd we lose you then?
10%.
Yeah, all right.
I would have gone AW.
AW?
Yep.
For Essendon.
Yep. He was a great kick. Stab pass.
I'm not doing it. I'll come back to it. Fremantle, Brisbane, 5:10 PM Sunday.
Yep.
In Perth.
Yep.
All right. I'm going.
Okay. Who are you going?
Could be anyone, really. Could be any number of players. NL.
NL.
Yep.
Nathan Love Murray. No.
He didn't play for Brisbane or Fremantle.
I know. Oh, it's Brisbane. Okay. Oh okay. NL.
Yeah.
Nigel Lappin.
Correct.
So I'm going.
Going with?
MP.
Michael Pryor?
Definitely not. Idiot. Okay. Michael Pryor, he was ragged.
Matthew Pavlich?
Yeah.
He wasn't a great kick.
He was a beautiful kick, except if he had to... Oh, mate, he was a superb kick. Yeah. But he was a beautiful long drop punt. All right, I'll go for somebody else then. I'll go for...
No, it's all right, it's fine. You can go for him.
No, if you don't like him, we'll go for someone
else. Van Damme says you mean Andy Wilson for us.
Correct.
Okay, yeah, good call.
He was a beautiful stab pass.
Also very gifted runner who won the 400-metre race they had at halftime of the 1977 Grand Final replay, which is why there was a second circular boundary inside the boundary, which was really stupid.
Good fact.
But there you go.
Who was... Remember they used to have in the VFA, they used to have the handicap race?
Yeah, the Dandy Dollar Dash. Hey, Damien, yeah, so you really put on music underneath for anything?
It's do you know what the name of that music is, Rowan or Damon, what it's called? It's the music from Jeopardy, and it's called Syncopated Clock.
Of course it is.
It is.
No, I believe it.
So that Dandy Dollar Dash, do you remember the poor rabbit they used to have off the front?
No.
In the pink singlet?
A lure.
No, it was a guy that always started with a 40-metre start.
Oh, well, it didn't matter because Norman Yim always won.
There was Norman Yim. He was always off the front.
But he won, didn't he?
Occasionally he'd hang on, but...
All right, last game.
Dave Sullivan.
Monday night, Western Coast.
Dave Sullivan's brother.
This is just stream of consciousness, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
West Coast playing Melbourne on Monday evening, 8:10 p.m. All right. I'm going for RF.
Robert Flower?
Correct.
Okay. I'm going for LK.
Laurie Keane.
Very, very, very well done. What was his most famous kick? He had one kick in the most famous of all kicks.
I don't remember that.
In a state game. He was in the ruck and he knocked it down, but he picked it up.
Right.
And he kicked a goal. He just had the biggest kick you've ever seen. Three steps, bam.
All right, we've got some other suggestions. Shannon Hearn.
Yes.
Travis Peter Johnson. Matera. Yeah, Travis Johnson, good choice. Dion Stenner. David Schwartz, says L.
Yeah, and he's remember that goal he kicked against Carlton in that final?
Yeah. Stephen Smith's gone with Robbie Fowler for Liverpool. I think he meant Robbie Flower.
Robbie Fowler. You remember what he did to get in trouble when he played
for
North
Queensland?
Can I just
say a name without you having to tell an anecdote about the said person? Is it possible?
Well, he had the most infamous goal celebration in the history of soccer.
Oh, yeah, the snorting the line, yeah. I reckon you mentioned that last week.
Pardon?
You mentioned that last week.
No, I didn't.
No, I don't know.
That must have been your cocaine sniffing mates.
I don't have cocaine sniffing mates. I don't have mates. all right, we're done. Thanks for joining us. Good fun show. We'll be back to wrap up nearly the whole round on Sunday night. I know it's a game Monday night, but we're still doing the podcast review edition Sunday evening. We'll be back here next Friday evening when the big Friday night game will be. Oh, it hasn't been confirmed yet. So don't worry about it. Could be anything, really. In fact, it's looking like it might be Giants and Richmond, depending on what Richmond do this week, I think. Philip Van Dam says, it's no wonder I don't have any friends after that other person I was talking about. I certainly lost a few through that period, I'll tell you. I bet it really, can I just honestly say that's as much as I've ever said about it publicly, and I won't be saying anything more. Because it's pretty interesting stuff. All right, that takes us out from Footyology Final Siren. Thanks for your company. Hope your side has a good win this weekend. Well done, GWS, on a great win down at the Cattery. We'll see you later.